When a man starts out with nothing, when a man starts out with his hands empty but clean, when a man starts out to build a world, he starts first with himself and the faith that is in his heart, the strength there, the will there to build.
Langston Hughes, born on February 1, 1906, published his first poem, The Weary Blues, in 1926, and went on to become the poet laureate of the African-American experience. The Poetry Foundation notes that the popular writer of the Harlem Renaissance gave hopeful expression to the aspirations of the oppressed, even as he decried racism and injustice. In addition to poetry, he published fiction, drama, autobiography, and translations. The Academy of American Poets writes that he is known for his insightful, colorful portrayals of black life in America from the 20s through the 60s, and for his engagement with the world of jazz and the influence it had on his writing. All in all, the life and work of Langston Hughes that helped shape the artistic contributions of black America still resonates today more than 100 years after his birth. Beginning in 1958, Hughes became part of Pacifica Radio's broadcast history with a discussion of his life and a reading of his early poetry. We begin this program today with an excerpt of an interview conducted in 1963 by Eve Corey for Pacifica Station WBAI in New York City, following the publication of his book of prose, Something in Common and Other Stories.
We kind of got you up this morning or this afternoon. It's 4 o'clock, and you say that you first get up at 4.
Well, I work at night, you see, and so sometimes I don't start writing until 12 or 1 o'clock because there's not much use trying to do anything that requires a great deal of concentration in New York in the daytime or in the early evening.
Especially when carpenters come in. What did you just told me?
My windows were being fixed, but that's only a minor interruption. One has usually many interruptions during the day. The phone rings 40 times. Strangers come by, relatives you haven't seen in 10 years.
They just drop in.
Drop in time. And you can't say no. So the result is that when peace and quiet settles down, it's usually around midnight, you see. Then I may try to, or usually do try to, do some serious writing.
Sort of the quiet time for you. And
yeah.
Then you spend the rest of the day doing what? When you have leisure time to use.
Oh, I don't seem to have too much, really. When I wake up, is usually 2 or 3 or sometimes even 4 o'clock, depending on whether I work through daylight or not, I read the mail. And the mail is, maybe sometimes a 2 or 3 hour task if one answers some of the letters immediately. Because there's a rather heavy mail, and now that I'm writing for the New York Post, I get quite a deal of fan mail. And
what kind of letters do you get?
On the whole, very cordial and usually nice letters commenting on some aspect with which the writer agrees, but
I knew there was going to be a but.
There's always a few letters of disagreement and sometimes violent disagreement, and once in a while from people who are not very pro-civil rights, one gets angry and unsigned letters, Ku Klux Klan type of letters.
Really?
Yes.
Are these postmarked New York or?
Most of them are. Most of them seem to be Brooklyn.
Well, what do they disagree with? I mean, I'm sure it's not your prose.
Well, they disagree with decent housing for Negroes, for example. Let Negroes stay in Harlem, or why should they live all over New York? They got Harlem. And
you live in Harlem yourself?
I live in Harlem, which I like very much. And I stay there because I like it, but on the other hand, I would hate to be ghettoized against my will. And New York is not a ghetto. The colored people in New York do live more or less all over the city now, you see. So Harlem is no longer a place where you have to live if you don't want to, if you're colored. But I happen to like it very much. It's a very lively community, and so I live there. But many of my friends live in Park West Village in the 80s or down in the village or in Brooklyn or in the Bronx, you see. And There is, of course, housing difficulties still for colored peoples, but not anywhere near what they used to be.
Mm-hmm. You originally came from Joplin, Missouri. Did you move directly to Harlem?
Oh, no. I was just born in Joplin. I don't even remember it. I've lived so many places since then.
Well, then you're a native New Yorker, almost.
Well, I've been here more or less off and on for at least 25 years.
Worked as a seaman, and you went to West Africa and Europe. Which sounds quite fascinating, especially the West Africa part.
Yeah, I had a wonderful series of trips and enjoyed them very much. And sometimes I wish I were a seaman again. You get to travel. On freight boats, I've never worked on passenger ships, but on freight boats they go rather leisurely, you know. And they stay in odd ports to which one would not otherwise be likely to visit. And
where?
Sometimes they stay for 8 or 10 days. Oh, well, ports like Burutu up the Niger River and Boma up the Congo River on this African trip, you know.
When was this? I mean, what?
This was way back in 1925, I believe.
Quiet times.
Quite a time ago, yeah.
Mm. And quiet, not quite what West Africa is today.
Well, no, I've been back several times, you know. In fact, I was in Africa twice last year, in Nigeria, in Ghana, in Uganda. And it is a very wonderful and interesting continent now, with a great deal of advancement being achieved by the newly liberated nations.
Mm-hmm. Is that where you edited the poems from Black Africa?
Well, I collected a great many poems and short stories from Africa. I have been doing so over a period now of 6 or 8 years, and brought out an anthology called An African Treasury of Poetry and Prose a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now, this May, my collection of African poetry is coming out, called Poems from Black Africa.
This was the one you edited?
Yes, I edited it, and it contains the major poets writing in English and the major poets writing in French, but translation difficulties they're not insurmountable, but they take a lot of doing, and so the French poets are not as well represented as those from Nigeria and Ghana and the other English-speaking African countries.
What about, are there any talents, shall we say, poets, African poets, who write in some of the various African languages?
Yes, there are, and some of the poets are bilingual or even trilingual.
Mm.
I mean, for example, in Nigeria, most people speak one of the native languages, Yoruba or Igbo. And some of the writers write in Yoruba, and most of them are educated in English schools, you see, English language schools. And English is the sort of lingua franca between the tribal peoples anyway. I mean, the Igbos and the Yorubas cannot understand one another except when they talk in English. So it is the common language. It's the language of the newspapers of Nigeria and of Ghana. And so most of the literary people use English, and sometimes they write in their own native tongues as well.
How is the translation problem there, I mean, as far as putting the native dialect into English?
Well, it's not great. There are so many people who speak both tongues, you see.
Does it kind of lose in the translation, though?
Well, now, of course, I can't tell. Not,
you
not,
don't know any of the
don't know the dialect. African languages, no.
Mm-hmm. I see that you have a number of books for children on the market, and a book of jazz, first book of jazz.
Yes, I think that's perhaps the only history of jazz for children that's been written. There have been many excellent jazz books for adults, but I know of none for young people.
Nor do I, come to think of it. Also, first book of rhythms, which, do you have these illustrated?
Yes, they are illustrated, and they're part of the Franklin Watts first book series, a series designed to introduce young people, children, to subjects when they begin to be interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
They have some quite wonderful books, first book of stones, the first book of archaeology, and so on. And I have written, so far, 5 books in that series.
What started you on books for children?
Well, I was asked to, if I would consider writing those particular books. And
somehow it seems that it would be natural. Something in Common.
Yes.
Which is a selection of stories
Well, it's derived from two previous collections of short stories of mine and includes 11 new ones that have never been in book form before.
The simple stories have been...
Oh, yes, simple stories have been in book form, but none of the simple stories are here. These are the more or less straight short stories that I've written over the years. And it includes one of my stories, which has been anthologized a great many times. Perhaps is my best-known short story. It's called A Good Job Gone.
Langston Hughes on Pacifica Radio from 1963. On May 22, 1967, Langston Hughes died of complications from prostate cancer. The following program was recorded by Pacifica Radio at his residence at 20 East 127th Street in Harlem, New York City, and was broadcast in memoriam in 1968. The home of Langston Hughes has been given landmark status by the New York City Preservation Commission, and East 127th Street in Harlem has been renamed Langston Hughes Place.
I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lured me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abraham Lincoln went down to New Orleans. And I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. A mother says to her child, "Well, son, I'll tell you. Life for me ain't been no Christian staff. It's had tacks in it, and splinters, and bulbs torn up, and places with no coppers on the floor. Bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on. And reaching landing and turning corners, and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps, 'cause you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I still climb, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair."
Name the spittoons, boy.
Detroit. Chicago. Atlantic City. Palm Beach. Clean the spittoons. The steam in the hotel kitchens, the smoke in the hotel lobbies, and the slime in hotel spittoons. Part of my life.
Hey, boy.
A nickel, a dime, a dollar, $2. Buy shoes for the baby. House rent to pay. Gin on Saturdays. Church on Sundays. My God. Babies and gin and church and women and Sunday. All mixed with dimes and dollars and clean spittoons and house rent to pay.
Hey, boy.
A bright bowl of brass is beautiful to the Lord. Bright, polished brass like the cymbals of King David's dances. Like the wine cups of Solomon.
Hey, boy.
A clean spittoon on the altar for the Lord. A clean, bright spittoon, all newly polished. At least I can offer that.
Come here, boy.
This year, maybe, do you think I can graduate? I'm already 2 years late. Dropped out 6 months when I was 7. A year when I was 11. Then got put back when we came north. To get to go through high school at 20 is kind of late. But maybe this year, I can graduate. Maybe now I can have that white enamel stove I dreamed about when we first fell in love 18 years ago. But you know, rooming and everything, then kids, cold water flats and all that. But now my daughter's married, and my boy is most grown, quit school to work. And where we are moving, there ain't no stove. But maybe I can buy that white enamel stove. Me? I've always wanted to study French. It doesn't make sense. I'll never go to France. But night school teach French. Now at last, I've got a job where I get off at 5 in time to wash and dress. So I'll study French. Someday, I'm gonna buy 2 new suits at once. All I want is one more bottle of gin. All I want is to see my furniture paid for. All I want is a wife who would work with me, not against me. Say, baby, could you see your way clear? Heaven, heaven is my home. This world I'll leave behind. When I set my feet in glory, I'll have a throne for mine. I want to pass the civil service. I want a television set. You know, as old as I am, I ain't never owned a decent radio yet. I'd like to take up Bach. Montage of a Dream Deferred. Buddy, haven't you heard? The instructor said, go home and write a page tonight and let that page come out of you. Then it will be true. I wonder if it's that simple. I'm colored, 22. Born in Winston-Salem. I went to school there, then Durham, then here to this college on the hill above Harlem. I'm the only colored student in my class. The steps from the hill lead down into Harlem, through a park. Then I cross St. Nicholas, 8th Avenue, 7th. And I come to the Y, the Harlem branch, where I take the elevator up to my room, sit down, and write this page. It's not easy to know what is true for you or me. At 22, my age. But I guess I'm what I feel and see and hear. Harlem, I hear you. Hear you. Hear me. We too. You. Me talk on this page. I hear New York. Me? Who? Well, I like to eat, sleep, drink, and be in love. I like to work, read, learn, and understand life. I like a pipe for Christmas present, a records, Bessie, Bob, a Bach. I guess being colored doesn't make me not like the same things other folks like who are other races. So will my page be colored that I write, being me? It will not be white, but it will be part of you, instructor. You are white, yet a part of me, as I am a part of you. That's America. Sometimes, perhaps you don't want to be a part of me. Nor do I often want to be a part of you. But we are. That's true. As I learn from you, I guess you learn from me. Although you are older and white, and somewhat more free. This is my page for English B.
You've been listening to the Langston Hughes Memorial Program broadcast on Pacifica Radio in 1968.